Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast with myself, Ryan Abraham, and Gerard Martinez, USCFootball.com recruiting expert. We're going to bring him on, answer some of your questions from the message board, talk about the latest going with USC football recruiting, obviously with Clay Helton being retained. It's going to change the recruiting landscapes a little bit. If they were going to make a head coaching change, that would have changed things as well. So we're going to talk to Gerard about all that, where USC's ranked, some official visitors, commits, decommits, some big names that are still out there. Lots of topics we want to get to with Gerard Martinez. You can follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. Of course, he's always answering your questions on the Peristyle. Welcome in, Gerard. How are you, man?
Hello, Ryan Abraham. Long time, no talk.
It's been a while, huh?
It's been a very, very long while, and I will let all the listeners know that is all your fault.
It's all my fault since I do all these other podcasts. I told you there's ways you could do the podcast, but no, it has to go through me. So
I have to do my own podcast now. I have to produce my own podcast.
I could produce it if you record it without me being a host, because I'm hosting 15 other shows.
We do want to get a lot of excuses, USC fans. Yes. You guys are tired of excuses, aren't you?
From you, excuses. Then I have to be the one that runs all these things all the time. So I didn't get to hear back from you on the text message. Are you going to come on Tunnel Vision on Sunday night? Is that going to be?
Oh man, you're going to put me on the spot.
Put you on blast.
The podcast. Oh, what a setup! I should have texted you back. No. I can try. It's a long drive for me. It's a very long drive, and it's a bad time of year. But I can try. The problem is Sunday night, you know, we're trying to get a hold of official visitors. USC will have 6 or 7 official visitors this weekend, and this is the last weekend. This is the last weekend before you're going to have the early signing period. So they're trying to close out the early class. USC will have some guys coming in January. It's not going to be a completion of the class like with some schools. So we're going to see what happens in January. We got Jack Yari, who is the former USC commit, 4-star tight end out of Murrieta Valley High School. He was a commit to USC, but decommitted last month and is still looking at USC. And I think after Clay Helton was retained, decided he was going to go ahead and postpone his early signing and go ahead and go into January and then sign in February. So that's there's a little bit of recruiting that will spill over into January, and that's kind of rare these days. It seems like nowadays you're not even getting plan B's in January. You're getting plan D, E, and F because there's so few kids that wait anymore.
Yeah, it's tough, and that's Gerard's technique right there, by the way. He's going to answer the question by, no, I'm not going to do the live show, and then start talking about something else. Just excuses. We're going to get you out to come to do the live show. I know it's a long drive, but people want to see you. They're always popular when you come on. They love you on the show.
I tell you what, I was popular when USC was recruiting better. My popularity has dropped significantly as the recruiting rankings have dropped.
Speaking of, so right now, USC actually got into the 80s, but right now, recent commitment, USC's number 76 in the country in recruiting, in the rankings, just above Illinois and behind Northern Illinois, Appalachian State, Virginia, the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana, Brigham Young, Miami of Ohio, Vanderbilt, Duke, USF, Troy, Bowling Green, Western Michigan, all these teams ranked above USC. USC's 11th in the Pac-12. The only team USC's beating is Utah, which that still doesn't make any sense to me. This is going to change, but USC's going to move up. We knew something was going to happen once the Clay Helton news broke one way or the other. There's going to be some commitments. There's some silence. There's some guys that are going to flip and stuff like that. I don't think it's going to be a top 20 class. We saw number 20 was last year's Gerard. That was the worst we've ever seen in the internet era since this started to be ranked. There's no question, right? This will be the worst class in USC history since we've started doing this.
Most likely. You know, you kind of always leave a little bit of wiggle room because you never know. It is USC, and they will have some guys that, you know, down the stretch here are going to consider them behind closed doors. There's a little bit of things working, you know, with some higher rated players, and they'll have a five-star guy, Justin Flo, coming on an official visit this weekend. We'll get into that probably later. But yeah, it looks to be tough to get into that top 20 range. You're looking at best case scenario, probably top 25. That's sort of, I think, feasible with the right pieces falling into the right places. But that's, you know, also considering they're going to get some guys that are going to flip from some other schools. You have to do that right now if you're USC to get into that top 25. There's no way that you can get there without flipping some commitments from other schools.
Yeah, they're going to have to do that. So we'll see how successful that is. You know, our buddy Gavin Morris and some of that crew, they're going to be doing a lot of work and seeing what they can do there. I posted on the message board, like, the peristyle is moving so fast. It's crazy how many people are on it and how things are moving. I mean, I already have 9+ responses. I think there's 17 responses, 7 minutes in 7 minutes on the board about questions. So people do care about recruiting. I know there haven't been, they've been asking for one of these Trojan Blast recruiting podcasts, but they're, yes, the interest isn't as high because USC's not in on a lot of the big names that, you know, that you've come familiar with over the years. It's a different kind of recruiting, but there's still, you know, important aspects. Last year's class wasn't ranked very high, and actually, but a lot of those dudes worked. You know, a lot of them, you know, came in. Like, some of the 3-stars were studs. So, you know, even though last year's class wasn't ranked as high, at least they're turning out well. This class doesn't look the same way unless you get some big flips at the end. Do you want to start with official visitors, like the last, you know, the last weekend and then this coming weekend, or how do you want to do this?
Well, last weekend, USC was able to get in about 5 official visitors. You kind of alluded to sort of one of the bigger issues with this class being rated high. There's 2 inherent issues with the class being rated high. One is that it's only going to probably be 17 to 18 commits. So you're not getting a 20-plus class like you normally would. And a lot of those schools right now that are ranked ahead of USC are already near the 20s or already in the 20s. So there's going to be some shifting in that. And USC only has 10 commits right now. So it's not going to be a big class, but it's still a small class relative to where a lot of other schools are right now. The other inherent issue that they have is that you've got 5, 6 offensive linemen committed in this class. And this is not a great class for offensive linemen, so you've sort of got dual issues there. You've got a class where you have to get offensive linemen. It's a need. The real issue, we talked about this ad nauseum, but we talked about this last year, they whiffed badly on offensive linemen last year. The last recruiting cycle, that was the cycle that you needed to sign 5 guys and you needed them to be local players, and they would have been, majority of them, 4-stars. You didn't. You swung, you missed, and now USC is left to scramble to try to get a bunch of guys that they hope they can develop, and it is a class full of linemen. So last week, they had Cortland Ford, a 6'5", 6'6", 300-plus-pound offensive lineman from, if you remember this, Cedar Hill. That's where Cedric Ware went.
Yeah.
And he turned around and committed, really committed actually Sunday on his visit, but he publicly committed yesterday, last night, and we spoke to him. Now, this is an interesting recruit because Cortland Ford was, 2 years ago, a huge name in recruiting. He had a bunch of offers from the SEC, Georgia, Alabama. He committed to LSU, and he was an LSU commit for a while, but he hurt his knees. He had 2 knee injuries, and that plummeted his stock. And now a lot of people are very wary of those injuries, and they look at him more as potentially a guard than the left tackle franchise type player than he was before the injury. So USC's taken a bit of a gamble with him with those injuries, but potentially if he's healthy, and he was healthy all this past season to my knowledge, you're getting a guy that maybe he goes back to his old form and he can be that player that a lot of people thought was going to be an offensive tackle that would play in the SEC a bunch. USC also hosted Michael Drennan II, who's a running back, and I think that's sort of the kind of the key position for this class being good and being bad. Like, it's not going to be a great class, and we talked about in terms of just the rankings, but in terms of getting some guys that can play, can contribute, when you got a bunch of linemen, you're not going to have a lot of impact players that are going to play as true freshmen. Linemen are just not going to play as true freshmen for the majority, especially when you're getting guys that are a little more projects, and they tend to be guys that if they're coming off of injuries or they got to put on weight, et cetera, you don't want to throw a bunch of freshman offensive linemen out there. It's a position that requires some maturity, some physicality, getting in the weight room, getting a red shirt. But with the skill players, you can kind of sprinkle them in there. And like you said, USC didn't have a great class last cycle, but they did have quite a few contributors to this season and a bunch of guys getting legitimate playing time and some guys actually showing that they're going to be stars down the line. And some of those guys were four stars, some of them weren't. But with this class, you got a bunch of offensive linemen. The running back is really the one position that I think USC needs to get a guy, mainly because you've tried to get two running backs in the past, really two classes, and they've only been able to sign one running back. You've got Marquis Stepp, who has been injury prone. He's been injury prone coming out of high school. That was the big knock on him, and then he gets injured this season. You still have Stephen Carr and Vi Malapai. Malapai has been kind of off and on with his injuries. He's contributed a little more, but Stephen Carr has had the injury bug as well. Both those guys are going to be seniors. I think you've got to sign a quality running back, a good, solid four-star guy that, if need be, can come in and can contribute and can just, you know, be there as a scholarship guy to be able to plug in, just maybe just giving yourself some reps. USC, we saw them offensively this past season. When they were, I think their worst offensively, it was when they only had Keenan Christian there. And that's not a knock on Keenan Christian. Keenan Christian played really well. But Keenan Christian was 181 pounds. And you saw that certain scenarios where you had a third and three, a third and two, USC still had to pass the ball. They really got away from the running game in the red zone a lot, and they were really bad in the red zone in those games because they just didn't have a guy that could maybe lean a little more and get an extra yard or two. They also were suffering a bit in pass protection because Keenan not only was a freshman, again, 181 pounds. You get a linebacker up the middle who's 240 pounds or a stunt or something, and he's trying to take those guys head on. He ends up getting bowled over. So I think USC, they need to get a back in there that's got a little more strength, a little bigger. It'd be a great class for them to be able to get a featured back. They also had Jordan Banks, the linebacker commit for ASU, coming on an official visit for USC. I think USC's definitely they're in the running for him, potentially. Kobe Pepe and Andres Dewark, both commits to USC, officially visited as well, and to work part of that big offensive line class that USC has.
Yeah. What about for, you know, between now and – so the early signing period starts December 18th and goes to the 20th. So you got 3 days. You already mentioned USC is going to try to sign some guys in the, you know, the old signing period in February because, you know, just a lot of things have been delayed. Any top prospect you could get to hold off, I think that's a good, you know, good thing for USC to just give them some more time to recruit and everything. But is there any more visitors coming up that would be a big deal? Like, what do you think about that before the signing period?
Well, Justin Flo is the big visitor. And Justin had been leaning towards visiting USC for a while. There was a lot of talk that if Clay Helton was retained, he would not visit USC. It was actually thought that they'd have to get a guy like an Urban Meyer or a big name for him to actually get on campus. But, you know, Justin's dad and Justin's circle, they're all very pro-USC. They really love USC. I've been around them. I was actually at a game of his and was with his dad and his uncle who handles his recruitment. And they didn't know the USC game was on. I think it was the USC-Colorado game that weekend. And so, I mean, they were immediately on their phones like, oh, USC's playing? Oh, USC's playing? They're very interested. I mean, I've said this before, but there's a lot of those top kids in this class that really want USC as an option. Justin's one of the few guys that is going to take that official visit and give USC a look. And you know, it's got some of his other schools that have been in his recruitment for a while a little nervous. I think Clemson's a little nervous about that last visit to USC. I think some other schools are. And people have asked me, oh, is he still going to visit? I hear Clemson is going to tell him to cancel his visit. As of right now, he's still going to officially visit USC. So, you know, we got to wait a couple days to see what happens. I'm sure there'll be some conversations and some things last minute if Clemson is indeed a little nervous about that, and a lot of people project him to go to Clemson. So that's he's kind of the big guy that's still out there, the five-star that's going to officially visit that everybody kind of knows about. There's some other guys that they're working on as well. Can't really talk about that, but they'll have, you know, a good half dozen, maybe seven recruits that will be on campus, including some commits like Josh Jackson. A couple other guys, I think Jamar Sakona is also due for his official visit this weekend. So we'll see how that shakes out. You know, I think for USC to get into that area of top 20, they got to have a five-star commit in there. You know, they may need to have two guys in there to really break through to get to that, you know, 16, 15 type area where they are right now, and considering they're only going to have 17 or 18 commits in this class.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to need that. If you could get a big one like a Justin Flo, I think it's a salvageable class like it was last year where, you know, if everything works out right and some of the big names pan out, it might not be that bad. But this is potentially, I mean, this is the worst we've seen, right? I mean, just it's not really ever been like this covering USC recruiting where you're ranked 11th in, a week before signing day. Like this is uncharted territory to us because we just never seen anything this bad.
Yeah, it's never been like this, but this is sort of the reverberation of that 5-7 year. It sort of trails you by a season. And, you know, when we talk about USC finishing strong, it's relative to where they are right now. And it's kind of like relative to the season. You know, it sort of mirrors the season. A lot of you talk about USC and you go, okay, they finished the season strong. They won, I think, 5 out of the last 6 games. Okay, that's great. Now, relative to the national scene, college playoffs, they're completely irrelevant. I mean, realm, it's not necessarily a strong finish, but they did, you know, win 5 out of 6 games. So that's kind of sort of how the recruiting is going right now. It's like, you know, they're going to get some guys, they're going to move up the ranks pretty quickly. But in terms of, you know, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the LSUs of the world right now, yeah, they're nowhere in that stratosphere.
So before we get into, there's some recent decommits and a couple of commits, USC fans freak out for either one because they're either decommits of 3 stars, freaks them out, and then a 3-star commits and that freaks them out. So I don't know how it's really weird, but I think it's all tied into we were waiting on the news, you know, and the news didn't come till 11 days after USC's last game. And that's one of the, you know, the big criticisms of what Mike Bone did, saying that he wasn't looking at other coaches, which, you know, we don't believe, but that 11 days leading up to this early signing period, I think could have potentially hurt USC. But what is this meant overall that, you know, Clay Helton was, you know, on the hot seat, everyone, you know, there was a report that came out that he was actually fired, something they got to deal with recruits and all that. And then kind of going forward, like, what does it mean now that they know he's going to be coming back?
It helps. It helps. I mean, it's certainly one of those things where at least there's some finality to the class and to the recruits that are waiting to figure out, okay, what is USC's next step? Obviously, there's a far cry from Urban Meyer coming over and taking over the football program and keeping Clay Helton. I mean, for a recruit, there's a lot of questions about, oh, wow, Urban Meyer, I mean, what is he going to do? But there's the hype of it's Urban Meyer and he has a bunch of championship rings. With this, they know what to expect. They know Clay Helton. And Clay Helton, listen, I've said this before, but, you know, for the record, he's a good recruiter. I mean, he's not a bad recruiter. He's not a guy that sits in home or has conversations with recruits and you get this weird vibe like the recruits don't like him. The recruits always speak well of him. They think that he's a very good man, sincere and honest, that he likes his players and he really wants to do well for his players. And that sort of is the, I guess that's the theme that always comes from every recruit I talk to who has a one-on-one conversation with Clay Helton, and the parents as well say that. So I think it helps just at least to have some type of closure here and for the coaching staff to move on without having to ask those questions. Now, is it, again, going to flip things and turn this recruiting class upside down and all of a sudden, boom, they're going to skyrocket? There was only one name on the coaching search board or the potential coaching search board that was going to change things in terms of recruiting, and that was going to be Urban Meyer. He was the only guy that had that ability to not just the hype created behind him, but he as a recruiter solo-wise, just by himself, is a guy that can make those calls and knows from a strategy standpoint of how to do certain things. It was going to be tough. Now, don't get me wrong. It was still going to be tough with 2 weeks left in the process. And as you pointed out, USC waited. And that's really the big question right now. Everybody sort of has their own theories about why USC waited and what's going on behind the scenes when they waited. And you have all kinds of different names thrown around and things like that. And, you know, we'd heard that Urban Meyer, from the booster side, there was some conversations going on there. But, you know, when Bone says that he never spoke to Urban Meyer or talked about him not being in contact directly with Urban Meyer, I totally believe that, because I actually never heard anything about him or the administration having any contact with Urban Meyer. It was always sort of from the Caruso side of things that Urban Meyer was a conversation piece. And I have to say, we don't even know for sure if that's true. That was sort of put out there many times. And you take it from sources and you say, all right, okay, I mean, it sounds good. You're hearing that from Board of Trustee members. You're hearing that from the boosters. And so I have to believe it. But then the way USC's done things over the years, I was a bit skeptical whether how true that was. I mean, how much did you talk to Urban Meyer? How far did you get in the point of, okay, I will come to USC for this, that, and the other? And certainly when you get into the details of, okay, this is how I want the program to look around me in terms of personnel, in terms of certain student-athlete initiatives with academics, in terms of his relationship with compliance, all those details, I was pretty steadfast in saying that I would believe Urban Meyer to USC when I saw it, and that was really the reason. It was the follow-through and the plan, and knowing that USC's never done that, and USC's never been motivated enough to do that. It's fine to say, we're going to back up the Brinks truck. We're going to write a blank check. Yeah, whatever. That's not what gets those things done. What gets those things done is when people have resolve and they're involved with that, and they get to the point of where, okay, they set that table and they say, all right, now, Urban, you know that we're organized and we can get all our ducks in a row. What do you want to change? This is what we think we can do for you. What do you want to change? I don't know that USC was ever going to get anywhere close to that point of the actual plan. It's fine to talk about money, but the actual plan was a whole other thing. And so I think with Clay Helton, the one good thing that comes from it is that, A, you know, Bone is saying that they want to reinvest in the football program. They want to give him the tools to succeed. And listen, he hasn't had those tools to succeed. We've talked about that. That, yes, you people have their opinions of Clay Helton as a coach, but one thing I can tell you for a fact is that not everything that Clay Helton has been on par with some of the other schools that he's competing against, whether it be with the support staff and the recruiting department, we've talked about that a bunch, whether it be strength and conditioning staff, they have those guys on a budget right now. They're not getting paid as much as Ivan Lewis's guys were. There's a lot of facilities. There's a lot of technical stuff that goes on now with film and just a bunch of stuff with marketing and recruiting. USC's been way behind for a long time. So it's nice to see they're at least sort of saying they're waking up to that. I think one of the big issues is that Clay's got to step up and he does have to pound the table a bit. And that's sort of what's kept him there a bit. I think that his lack of rocking the boat is why the administration loves him so much, but it's going to be the death of him. You know, eventually they're going to make a change because he's not getting those tools to succeed. And the next guy, if he's going to be a qualified coach and he's going to be a championship coach, he's not going to take that job unless he feels like he is going to get those resources.
All right. Well, excuse me, man. My voice is
wow.
It's been a long day. I'm sorry. And this is the premium podcast. We're going to make it special for people, but it's just, yeah, we did a 2-hour podcast earlier. Then I went to the dentist and got my teeth worked on, and now we're back talking again. With the recent decommitments, which are a huge, huge deal, and the commitments, which don't mean anything, that according to most USC fans, do you want to kind of give people, hey, here's what USC lost, here's what USC gained over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's a narrative thing. It's one of those things that if, oh, fire Clay Helton because, look, we can't even get 3-star guys. And then you get the 3-star guys, and it's like, fire Clay Helton because we're only getting 3-star guys. It's just part of the cathartic sort of getting that off their chest. And the fan base is still mad. I mean, they're, you know, we're weeks into this, and they are fuming still. They're on fire. So I understand that. I get it. That's where that comes from. USC loses Kyle Juergens, who was projected as a defensive lineman for USC. He's rated by 24/7 Sports as a three-star guard. I don't know why he was rated as a guard. I never saw him playing guard. I think he was an offensive tackle type guy, maybe down the line. But for USC, they were projecting him as a defensive lineman. But he is definitely a bit of a project. I mean, a real, real project. The guy is, 245 pounds, 250 pounds. He's not playing for another 2-3 years. So I think USC realizes they got to get some guys that, at least from a body standpoint, from a profile standpoint, you can shuffle them in there a little bit and get them some work on the scout team, and then, maybe redshirt them. And then by their redshirt sophomore year, they have the potential to be able to come in a little bit and get some minutes. That's sort of how I see it. And I think with Juergens, it was just really hard to be able to get him on the field. They also lose Joey Wright. And Joey Wright's a guy that I really liked at the camp. Now, we didn't get to see him in person in pads. He plays up in Reno. But a guy I know that had some grade issues, had some little bit of grade issues, and I think USC probably just, again, thought he was a project. But that was one of the guys that at least athletically looked like he could play tackle and get in front of a pass rusher. We saw him at the first elite camp over the summer, and he went one-on-one against Corey Foreman. Corey Foreman, made everybody look bad, but Joey Wright was the one guy that sort of got in his way and could stay in front of him a little bit. So that was an interesting move. I didn't predict that. I wouldn't have thought that Joey Wright would have been one of the guys that would have got shuffled out of the class, but really this is USC sort of reshuffling the deck. This is not all these guys are just decommitting because they hate USC and Clay Helton's being retained and they thought it was Urban Meyer. No. It has nothing to do with that. What they gain is Casey Collier, Mount Bellevue, out of Barbers Hill, which is kind of a new high school. He's a three-star offensive tackle. A guy that, I think part of him not being rated very high is because he hasn't had a whole lot of exposure. He never went to any of the opening regionals. He just went to the Under Armour camp. He's a big body. He's a 6'6", 6'7", guy, 300-plus pounds. USC is talking about him being able to play left tackle. I mean, we'll see. It's kind of hard for me to project and say he's going to play left tackle without having seen him in person. But he's a guy that's, he's a big body kid. And he comes from a school where the coaching staff actually moved there from Allen High School. Now, Allen was a big-time school. The coach there coached guys like Greg Webb, some really big-time offensive linemen. Kyler Murray was the quarterback there. And I think they won something like 3 state championships in a row at Allen. So he's gone on, moved to this new school, and Casey Collier is really one of the first offensive linemen that they've produced. So that's interesting. I mean, you look at both Corlin Ford and Casey Collier, and you're getting two players that come from pretty high levels of competition in Texas and pretty good coaching. So from that standpoint, when you're looking at that transition from high school to college, I don't think either of these guys are going to be in a bad position. I think they'll be pretty good. They'll transition pretty well from that standpoint. But again, it's a matter of, with Ford, injuries, staying healthy, trying to get back to his old form, getting that lateral mobility back in his legs. And then with Collier, I think it's just, how good is this kid? How good can he really be? It's just a big question mark. He's a kid from Texas that, again, a lot of people have not seen play in person.
All right. So I think, is there any other topics you want to go to? Because we got a lot of questions already on the, we can kind of fly through some questions or, I don't know, what do you think? Is there any other thing you want to talk about?
Can't get too much into official visits. We'll post something here on the Peristyle here pretty soon, just okay, about the official visitors. But no, I mean, we've kind of gone over what's happened recently and kind of what's going to happen. So let's dive into some questions. I'm sure it's going to, kind of drum up some things, some topics that maybe people are really interested in talking about.
Okay. Well, let's jump into some questions then. So I posted on the Peristyle, hey, Flash, quickly post your questions here. We've got a whole bunch of responses already. But I told people, like, don't post any trash talk, any trolling. We just want real questions. So these are going to be legit questions. Muscle031, what are the realistic chances of USC landing Justin Flo?
The realistic chances, as opposed to the... What chances?
Is it like a pipe dream? Like, because there were some reports from the Clemson board saying that they would get him to cancel.
The realistic chances, pre-visit, gosh, I'd say 25%.
Oh,
25%.
That's pretty
25%
high.
Chance.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's going to be 25% chance of rain. You go, eh, might leave my umbrella in the car. But we'll see. I mean, like I said, USC's got some angles there, and there's some things going on. There's a lot of questions, though, for him in USC. And I think at the end of the day, it probably ends up being just a visit out of respect, maybe, for the coaching staff and just for USC and the name. And again, the family is very, very pro USC in terms of just being USC fans. But I don't know from a coaching relationship standpoint, you got to make a move there. And that's the thing. And then there's questions still about, you know, what USC is going to do in terms of their coaching staff. And along with Clay Helton being announced that he was retained, there were reports that, oh, but he's going to change the staff and there's going to be significant moves. We'll see what happens there. I'm not totally convinced that that's going to happen. I think a lot of people assume that's going to happen, but a lot of people also assume that Clay Helton was going to be fired the last 2 years.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We have two questions from 34 Jump Cut. First, latest on Bijan Robinson.
Latest is that they're still recruiting him. USC's still in his ear. I haven't heard anything about him being on campus unofficially lately. I know that he said on the record that he was not going to take any further visits and that he was still good with Texas. I know it's a little interesting that Texas is hard after Graham Harrell. And if he stays at USC, that's a little bit of a recruiting sort of pitch that USC can make. Like, look, you know, we got the guy that they want to have. So why would you go there when you can come play for him here? So there's some stuff going on there. I'm proud of Bijan Robinson. I'm proud that he hasn't decommit and recommit like 9 times already, because he would have been a guy that out of the summer I kind of thought at some point would have decommit and then commit somewhere else and then decommit. And then we'd be at this point, you know, looking to see where he's going to recommit to again. So he's kind of been low key and, you know, he's kind of gone through the process, you know, very, very sort of traditionally, standardly. So we'll see if he's able to kind of shake that. But yeah, I mean, that's a guy that USC they're still trying. There's still contact with him.
Yeah. He also had a question about latest on coaching changes and if you're hearing thing on Chris Claiborne. And I want to give a shout out to Charlie, who wrote into the Harvey Hyde podcast a text message talking about he wanted to get rid of Clancy Pendergast and he wanted to hire Chris Claiborne. I assumed he meant for the defensive coordinator job. I said that's probably a bad idea. I didn't say probably. I said it was a terrible idea. But he wrote back and said no, just for a linebackers coach or something. So any thoughts on that, Gerard?
Well, that's sort of the hard dynamic to be able to project. I don't think USC is doing anything before the bowl game, obviously. What they do after that point is anyone's guess. I know Clancy Pendergast is a guy that Clay Helton respects a lot. He really had to go to the mattresses to get him back to USC. And let's face it, Clancy Pendergast, from a resume standpoint, is the most accomplished guy on that staff by far. There's not another coach that really has the pedigree that Clancy Pendergast has. Now, look, there's a lot of criticism as to, hey, the defense, the edge of the defense has been porous for I don't know how much long, I mean, how many seasons here where we've talked about USC not being able to contain the run and having issues being able to contain the run and having teams run for them for you know, 300 yards off tackle like UCLA did a year ago. There's a lot of, you know, criticism there, and there's obviously criticism because he's not a big-time recruiter. Now, you're not going to get a lot of defense coordinators that are necessarily going to be big-time recruiters. Coordinators have to kind of take a step back from that position of being the grinders on the recruiting trail, because you have game planning, you have packages, you have a lot of film you got to watch. That tends to be what you're all about. So I don't know that Clancy's necessarily gone, you know, that there was – I mean, shoot, last year there was the same – erroneous reports that Clancy Pendergast has been fired by a lot of the same people that were kind of thinking Clay Helton was fired. And that turned out not to be true. So again, I'm a little bit more conservative on that. I think it's going to be tough. obviously, if you're Clay Helton, you have to have an alternative. You have to have a replacement for Clancy Pendergast, and that's a whole other can of worms in and of itself.
So,
so with Chris coming along, I know Chris personally. I've known him. I played against him in high school. I think Chris wants to go into a good situation. And I think, yeah, potentially maybe Clancy Pendergast would not be the defensive coordinator if Chris Claiborne was to come about. And I don't want to speak for him, but, yeah, I get the sense that the potential hot seat that Clay remains on and sort of that thing, and the fact that, you know, there'd obviously have to be a spot open for him. Right now you've got Joe DeForest, who's an outside linebacker coach. Johnny Nansen, who's a linebacker coach, kind of jumps back and forth inside, outside. You've got two linebacker coaches, plus Clancy Pendergast. So you don't have any room. And if you're bringing in Chris because he was at Calabasas High School, unless you can get some kind of exemption, some type of waiver, you're going to have the issue with the Associated Prospect Rule, which states that you cannot have a relationship with any player that school recruits for 2 years before or 2 years after. So obviously, you know, USC doesn't have anybody committed from Calabasas, but 2 years from now, and they've already offered one of their younger linebackers from Calabasas, you know, USC couldn't go anywhere near Calabasas. So that would also be something that you have to consider if you're trying to bring him in as a support staff guy. Yeah. So, you know, there's that potential. And Chris would be a hell of a coach. I mean, he knows a lot. Chris is very, very smart. He really knows his football. He's not just like, you know, hey, I'm Chris Claiborne, I run the Buckeyes, come hire me. No, he knows his stuff. But again, it's one of those things that there's a lot of obstacles there. And I think, again, Chris wants to go into a good situation. He wants to go into a situation where he feels like he can move up the ladder, because Chris doesn't want to just be a linebacker coach. You know, that's not his ultimate goal. His ultimate goal is to be a coordinator and a head coach somewhere. So, yeah, he wants to be able to go somewhere where he feels like there's some stability and he's able to learn and he's able to sort of progress through the system.
All right, we got one from Arizona Trojan, AZ Trojan. Of the offensive line prospects that we have committed, which of them do you see us having the most, or which do you see as having the most upside? Do you see any of them having the potential to be early NFL players if developed properly?
I think the best guy on film is certainly Jonah Monheim. Jonah Monheim, his senior film is really, really, really good. If you guys haven't checked it out, get into his profile. We pulled the huddle film for him this past season, and it's tremendous. It's really good. And kind of far and away. The other guys are okay, but he's the guy that, while I don't know he's going to make an early impact, because he's only about 280 pounds, and he has to put on some weight, and he has to get stronger. From that standpoint of just watching his film, he's a guy that's underrated. You know, he's still a 3-star, I believe, from 24/7 Sports. I think he probably could have got that 4-star. That's the guy for sure that in this class, I think in terms of all the tools down the line, once he gets the physicality, once he gets the strength and some of that, you know, just a little bit of weight in his butt to be able to just be a little more powerful and be able to transition to the college game where you're playing against really grown men instead of high school at Moore Park. So, and Moore Park, okay competition. You know, it's sort of a hit and miss a little bit with them. So that will be a little bit of a transition for him getting used to that. But, you know, I mean, Drake London has done that pretty well and had a pretty good year at USC as a wide receiver. But again, you know, offensive line, different. You just got to mature. You got to go through the process. You got to go through strength and conditioning, all that kind of stuff. It's a little harder to be able to play right away on offensive line.
All right. Trojan in SF. How much is fan outrage over Clay impacting the 2019-2020 recruiting? Is it something recruits legitimately pay attention to? So they pay attention to Clay Helton being there or not, but do they pay attention to the fan outrage?
No, not really. I mean, there's a big gap between reading the message boards and talking to recruits. I've said that before, but it's you're living in different worlds, man. Like it's complete, you know, quantum physics here. Like we've got multi-universes. Recruits are in one, the fans are in the other.
Yeah.
I think the parents do read the message board, some of them, and they do ask me questions now and again about there's been questions about, you know, how did Clay become the dumbest guy in the world, you know, a year after he went to the Cotton Bowl? You know, how did he become such a bad coach when he won a Rose Bowl and then went to the Cotton Bowl and they're, you know, top 25 and all of a sudden, you know, 5-7 and like he's the worst coach in the world. And so you can see that's, you know, some of the parents just kind of checking in a little bit and reading some of the fan reaction. But the fans are definitely way more involved in this. They're I mean, yeah, they're if you're on the peristyle, you're a hardcore Trojan fan and you really know the nuances of things and the storylines and you've been able to follow them for long periods of time. Recruits barely watch games. I mean, really, they really barely watch games. Sometimes I'll see a kid on an unofficial visit and he's in the stands and he's on his phone the whole time. It great game. And he's on his phone. He's not even watching the game. And then he's, you know, their kids are 17 years old and they just don't look at things that closely. It's really one of those things where, you know, it's the adults around them that kind of give them the details of what's going on. And it shapes their opinion to some extent. And in some instances where you've got Trojan fans who are parents, because in this class, you've got a handful of kids that are the top kids. You're talking about, you know, Darian Green Warren, you're talking about Gary Bryant, you're talking about Bryce Young. They're all, you know, the parents are all very glued into what's going on at USC. So, you know, the fan outrage to some extent does reverberate with them, but it's filtered a lot once it gets to the kids. And like I said, the kids are kind of whatever. They talk to the coaches, and I think a lot of their opinions come from talking to the coaches every week.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Trojan 6. What's a realistic ceiling for how high this class could end up being ranked?
Yeah, I think it's going to sort of scrape close to 25-ish. You know, I could see it being like 27. 28. I think that's where more, I think, realistic where it's going to be. So it's I think probably between 25 and 30-ish is probably where it ends up. But like I said, there you know, you could see a couple moves here and there that push them, you know, closer to, you know, sub 25. I think top 20 is real difficult to get into.
All right. Let's see. We got Dolce Triad. He has three. We'll try to go through these quick. Which position coaches on staff do the recruits talk about the most? Positive
and
negative.
I tell you, one guy that's making a lot of noise in the recruiting trail right now is Mike Jenks. Mike Jenks is the primary recruiter for both those Texas offensive linemen, which is interesting. That I found interesting. You know, they didn't really talk much about Tim Trevino. They did sit down and have conversations and go over film with Tim Trevino on their official visits. But Casey Collier and Cortland Ford both talked about Mike Jenks being their primary recruiter, and really it sounds like Mike Jenks is sort of the guy leading the charge of most of the Texas recruits. Jonah Forrest has been involved with a couple guys as well, but Jenks has kind of been the guy that's been pushing. And obviously with Jenks, I mean, it's really more about the running backs. Like, it's nice, you know, going out there getting some linemen from Texas, but everybody wants to see him land that guy, that franchise guy, as a running back. And obviously Bijan Robinson's a guy he's been on for a long time. He was on Ty Jordan for a long time. And, you know, they sort of pivoted and offered a couple guys from California. I don't know that that's really going anywhere. So we're going to see, you know, maybe Mike Drennan is the guy. We're going to see what happens with that running back position. But Mike Jenks has kind of been the guy, I think, that's got the most buzz right now. Been a little bit of buzz about Joe DeForest. Again, it's weird. It's a class with a bunch of offensive linemen, and they're only going to have 17 kids in the class. So that's kind of the interesting thing. We haven't heard too much about Tim Trevino, but I think Tim Trevino is really recruiting more locally.
And then he says, does Clay Helton remain popular to the recruits despite him being on the hot seat continuously?
He does. I mean, in terms of, you know, feeling that he's been sincere and he's a trustworthy coach, I think with the parents and the kids themselves, they always say really nice things about Clay Helton. There's never been any, you know, issues with him or anybody's had anything bad to say about him or say that, you know, he's not doing this or doing that in our recruitment and we'd really like to go to USC, but Clay Helton, nobody's ever really said that, even with the losses. I think it's more the losses are instability and the kids fear that there's going to be coaching turnover and they won't have relationships with those coaches. And you always hear, and you're hearing it more now, I think parents and trainers and coaches and the kids themselves are wising up a bit to the fact that you can't commit to a coach. You can't commit to a school because of a coach. Those coaches come and go. They may, the day after signing day, might be on a flight to go coach somewhere else. It happens all the time. And so you have to know that. You have to realize that. And I think kids are becoming a little more aware of that. I think they're understanding that you got to look at the school for the school itself, being a student athlete there, and for everything that that school from a football development standpoint is going to offer you in terms of resources. And then as a student, if football was taken away from you, what is it going to be like to go to that school? What is it going to be like to live in that city?
Yeah. His third one, the last one, if GM were in Clay's shoes, what steps would he take to salvage this class?
Oh man, I have no idea. Why are you going to stick me with this class like this? I get 76. I get 76, 2 weeks to recruit, and GM's going to do. Hey man, I'm just going to. Here's my answer. I'll sign all the 5 stars. That's what I'm going to do. If I was in Clay's shoes, I'd promise them they're going to all start next year, and they're going to be all my guys. And screw all the guys that are on the roster right now. You guys guaranteed early playing time, and then in 2023, you guys are going to all get Nike contracts, and you're going to be millionaires in college.
Nice. All right. This is from Supcase. So we already kind of talked about that realistic recruiting rankings for early signing period, but what about for National Signing Day? Could it be higher? Are we talking about National Signing Day?
Well, yeah, the early National Signing Day and then the late National Signing Day. I think the fact that USC is going to have a couple visit weekends there in January says that, yeah, probably they're going to have some room to sign some guys, and they're going to have to sign some guys. And so, yeah, if there's, you know, some half-decent players that are left, talked about Jack Yari being a guy that is a potential prospect for them still as a tight end. And so, yeah, they could definitely go up. Is it going to go up a whole lot? No, I'm projecting that 17, 18 guys that they have room for. Now, granted, maybe there's some transfer portal stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some other attrition that goes on with the roster, and there's more room than that, and you get closer to 20, that would change things a little bit. And you can obviously, when you get into closer to February, you may know that, you know, early draft guys, there's always a weird draft jump from USC that you go, what? Why? What are you going to do? Dude, you're going to go undrafted. That seems to happen every year. So potentially, you know, a little more room opens up and they can assign more kids. But projecting that 17, 18, I'm still saying, yeah, 30, 25-ish is probably where they end up.
Screwy Louie 10, why do local recruits dislike Nansen? I think that's projecting there. I don't know if that's true, but what do you
think? Yeah, that's kind of a loaded question there. You know, why do they hate Johnny so much? I don't know that they do. I know that, you know, there's been some misses, you know, more in last year's class. But I don't know that they dislike him. I think, again, a lot of the dislike has to be with the instability of the program, the lack of wins. They're not developing guys well for the NFL. The past couple draft classes have been a bit disappointing. I think the real albatross for them was Emma Marshall. I think when he went and started to sort of drop and didn't come out his junior year, that was a big red flag for a lot of kids locally because, you know, Emma Marshall is sort of one of those generational type guys in a lot of people's eyes. He was a guy that was like, you know, as a freshman, he had offers from USC and UCLA. I mean, he was a 4-year recruit, which is kind of rare. And so when you've got a guy that has that much hype and is that big, people go, okay, you came in as a 5-star, you better leave as a 5-star, which is to say you better go in the first 2 rounds of the NFL draft, and you probably should be leaving early. And when that doesn't happen, it just, you know, that starts to get people talking, and there was a lot of negative buzz about that. Now, you know, certainly USC's changed defensive back coaches, and they've done some different things. And I think, you know, there's potential they could have 2 first-round picks this upcoming year. You could maybe get Pittman sliding in there, and you get Austin Jackson, who becomes a first-round pick. So, you know, it's just been, I think, overall, when you're comparing to, you know, Ohio State, Alabama, some of these schools that have been putting like 5-6 guys into the first round or the first 2 rounds, USC's just not been competitive with that, and that's definitely hurt them. And it doesn't matter really which coach you're talking about. It doesn't matter what position coach. Those kids are not feeling USC as much as other schools.
There's a couple in real. I locked the thread, by the way, while we were talking, because it went to page 2, like within a few minutes. It was like, so there's just too many questions coming in, but thanks for posting. We'll try to get to all of them. Overdriven wrote in and Trojan 82 with two questions that are similar, but who are the four mystery silent commits that Bone has been throwing around? Hope all of them are five stars. And then the other question was, what was meant by Mike Bone about the silent commits and NCAA rules about announcing them? So there were some people saying that you're not allowed to talk about specific recruits. I don't know if it's a rule where you can't say that you have a silent commit. You just can't talk about who it is. But I don't know if you know anything about that, Gerard.
Yeah, you can say generally that, yeah, we have commitments and we're on some really good players and blah, blah, blah. But you can't name names specifically. And so that's why he didn't name names. And if they're silent commits, then they're guys that don't want to actually come out publicly. So I wouldn't necessarily be doing anybody any favors by mentioning their names here on the podcast either.
Okay.
They have three guys that I would say are solid guys that, you know, within the context of silent commit are very much leaning USC. But we've talked about silent commits in the past. And when I first started doing that, they were a thing. They were one of those things where a kid would silently commit to USC because he wanted to take visits and he wanted to enjoy the recruiting process elsewhere. That was also when USC was winning national championships and there was less to worry about. But over the course of the years, USC has won less games. They've become less relevant. And those visits to other schools have been way, way more significant. So now when you get a kid that says, hey, I really want to be a Trojan. Yeah, he's told the coaches, I want to come here. I'm good, but I'm still going to take a visit somewhere else, or I'm still going to take this home visit somewhere else. And you're coming off a 5-7 year or an 8-4 year, and your coach is on the hot seat, you know, every year. That means nothing. It means that kid thinks that, you know, he fits in your program and he likes your program and he favors your program, but he is not committed whatsoever. There's nothing there binding him there, and you better still recruit your ass off to make sure that you close that deal.
Trojan to 2016. Are there recruits who would have considered USC if Clay Helton were not the coach but have now eliminated USC?
It would have depended on who was the coach. You know, that was the one sort of gray area as to, okay, let's say you don't get Urban Meyer, but you fire Clay Helton. Who are you bringing in that's going to make some significant moves with this recruiting class that you could hire? I don't know that there really was. Luke Fickell, is he going to come in and make some big moves and you know, do something that actually moves the needle with the recruiting class? Probably not. It's probably with no real regional ties. Really, none of those guys that you're talking about, PJ Fleck, even James Franklin, had any ties. And didn't have any coaches on their staff that really had any significant ties to the West Coast. So it wasn't like you had guys that were committed at some of these other programs and you're going after the coach. Like, for instance, Lane Kiffin. And this is why I've talked about this before, why the Lane Kiffin hiring actually made some sense. Lane Kiffin at Tennessee, with that coaching staff, they all had ties to the West Coast. They all were named. They knew the kids that were on the West Coast. They were recruiting a bunch of kids on the West Coast, and they even had some commitments from guys that had been overlapped recruited by USC. So when you bring him in and you hire him with just a few weeks to go on signing day, you actually can make some ground up because he's been recruiting some of those kids. With any of these guys that you could mention, Matt Rhule, Campbell, none of those guys, none of them moved the needle with any of these West Coast kids because they just don't really recruit a lot of those West Coast kids.
Yeah.
It's really the SEC schools. And maybe if you were to bring in a coordinator from like Clemson, like Brett Venables or somebody like that.
Dave Aranda's Southern California guy, and Bruce Feldman's reporting that UNLV might hire him to be the head coach. He makes $2.5 million for Coach O down there, and he would take a big pay cut just to be the head coach at UNLV. So, like, if they got someone like that, he would. He does. He's from California, so he would have some ties.
Yeah, and that's again one of those things where a lot of people would be critical of that move because he's not a head coach.
Right.
And you go, okay, why are you bringing in a guy that's going to learn on the job? So, yeah, there. I mean, not to say, well, Clay Helton wasn't a head coach either, and they did it, and they didn't do it with Coach Orgeron. And there's a lot of talk still about Orgeron and LSU and USC, and that's just something kind of interesting we're going to keep an eye on. You know, I talked to some people about Orgeron because his name did come up sort of as a Hail Mary at the end of this whole process of what are they going to do with Clay. And there were some people that were a little optimistic that, you know, Edredron isn't making a ton of money right now. He certainly isn't making tier one type money. Now, some of that has to do with Dave Aranda and his coordinators and his coaching staff. They're getting paid a lot of money, and Orgeron voluntarily has sort of backed off on that a little bit and made sure that his staff was taken care of. Now, there's some people that feel like USC, from a money standpoint, could throw more money at Orgeron and still allow him to pay $1 million, $1.5 million for some coordinators. That's the one thing that people get screwed all the time on the peristyle. Drives me, well, among other things, drives me nuts. USC has always paid coordinators a lot of money. Back to Norm Chow, Ed Orgeron, Monty Kiffin, Clancy Pendergast, they've all been million-dollar guys. They've always paid the coordinators very well. So that's sort of an interesting thing. Now, I've talked to other people that have coached Orgeron. I made some calls, and they go, he ain't leaving LSU. LSU, he can write his own ticket. He'll eventually get that raise. If the state's bankrupt, doesn't matter. They'll still find the money, and they'll get him that money, and they're never going to let him go if he's able to win there. But then other people also talk about, see what Ed Orgeron does without those coordinators, because that's really – a big part of that program right now. And if Aranda does leave, he's going to have to make that big move to go hire somebody else that is a big name that can do the same kind of job, because, you know, Ed has kind of taken back the CEO position and spot of just kind of managing the team and not being necessarily so into the scheme that they run. And so it's really one of those things where every time a coordinator leaves, they kind of have to sort of change things around a little bit, which, you know, is that's the way Dabo Swinney kind of does it too. Dabo Swinney is not necessarily known as being this, you know, tremendous offensive mind or defensive mind. It is a way that schools have been able to do that, and you don't necessarily have to have a guy that's a coordinator type like an Urban Meyer or Nick Saban.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see. Roven. Now, Roven, this is a dangerous one. I said don't post bull crap questions, but this is kind of funny. Questions. He says, will this podcast depress me further? I said only real recruiting questions. I guess that's real, right? Hopefully it doesn't.
Will it depress him further? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No, not I mean, further. You know what's going on. I mean, maybe the Orgeron stuff gets you excited. Maybe that's some weird sort of stuff that you can grab your claws into. Justin Flo's going to visit, you know, is a little bit of hope there. I mean, we could get into the, I know I haven't really addressed the sort of optimism that I talked about the day that Clay Helton was announced that he was coming back. I need some time away from this thing to sort of collect my thoughts and get into that. That's another time, another podcast. But, you know, this is sort of, I don't want to say this is rock bottom, because, you know, no, it's USC. You never know what they're capable of. But I think some decisions are going to have to be made by this administration and this school. The people are giving money to the school. There's some stuff that's going to happen. There's going to be a fork in the road, and they're going to have to, you know, kind of, excuse my language, shit or get off the pot when it comes to athletics in general. And so I think that brings us a little closer to that point. But, again, another podcast for another time.
Yeah. Real quick for me, I did an ESPN radio show, ESPNU radio show earlier today. It was like Tom Luginbill and someone else. I forget who it was. But they would just talk about recruiting, and because they do a lot of recruiting talk. One of the things they asked me at the end, I want to see if you agree with my answer. He said, you know, obviously Oregon's recruiting really well on the West Coast right now. Washington's doing a good job. But he said outside of those schools on the West Coast, who would be the team that would kind of give USC the most trouble on the recruiting trail? And I said Arizona State. Would you agree outside of Washington, Oregon, or is there somebody else?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that with Herm and sort of his angle, and he's, you know, he brought in Marvin Lewis. He's made some nice moves, I think, from a recruiting standpoint. Antonio Pierce is a dogged recruiter. He's kind of their version of Ken Norton. Obviously, they have not been as successful on the field. And in terms of development, there's still a lot of question marks with them. I know that they had a freshman quarterback, but USC had a freshman quarterback. And, you know, I Arizona State kind of, to me, still looks like Arizona State. You know, like, I kind of tweeted about that. It's like, they look good when things are going well, but when things start to go bad, they're Arizona State, and they kind of go back into that hole, just sort of undisciplined, all over the place. It looks like a very kind of incoherent sort of scheme. And so I don't know what Herm's really doing there. You know, I haven't seen, oh, that's a totally different team. Like, I could say this. When Jim Mora was at UCLA, saw a different kind of team. than the previous teams. Now, it wasn't necessarily always a good team, but it was different in terms of their approach, physicality, their aggressiveness. I think it was Gabe Marks, the former Washington State wide receiver, who had that great line about UCLA being fake tough guys because they had black spat and they had black black stuff
eye black,
you put on
your
face, and all this, and the visors, and it was kind of funny. It was like, I kind of could see that, but I think I was really trying to change the perception and things. And I don't know what Herm is like. He has a lot of great things to say, but they call him Hermisms. But I kind of saw the same team last year that we've seen all the time. It just seemed like the same team. So, but I agree with you in terms of recruiting. I do think that they can get some traction with some kids, and they've done well with Southern California, but they got to win. You know, at some point that works fine. The Arizona schools have sort of done that over the years. You know, you had Mike Stoops there at Arizona, and they kind of sort of like, hey, you know, we're going to do what USC did, and we're going to be this and that. And there was like a couple years there where they recruited really well. But when you don't win, it's just all talk. You know, it's just kids are like, whatever. Why? Okay, whatever. I can just stay home. I'll go to UCLA, go to USC to win 8 games or win 7 games, you know? So that's the biggest issue for them, just the team and how they're playing. But, yeah, I think in the short period here that, we've seen of them recruiting that staff, yeah, definitely. I think that's definitely the one team that can steal some guys away from USC when USC's not good or USC doesn't have really much stability with the coaching staff and people are kind of always talking about how they're going to get replaced.
Mr. Gray, how do coaches recruit players from the transfer portal, or porthole, as Gerard likes to say? Do they generally approach the player first or vice versa?
No, you can't recruit. I shouldn't say that. You can recruit players in the porthole. The porthole is a database.
Yes.
You can't recruit them before they get into the porthole. So you got to be kind of careful of how that goes. How they go about, I don't really know that process. It's such a new process. I don't know I think it's just a matter of, contacts and seeing, hey, that high school coach, does he still have contact with that kid who went to that high school? I don't know how much of it is the actual players that reach out. We've seen Theo Howard sort of hanging around USC a little bit, and that's a guy that, potentially could be a transfer guy. I think with USC, it's all a matter of how many spots they have. I think it's probably maybe a little bit of both, where you have some kids that maybe they see a situation, like with a quarterback. I think those guys are looking for a certain situation. They're looking for a certain scenario they can step into and play right away. So they're sort of already kind of whittling down their list before they probably even transfer. So a guy like Jack Sears is already kind of looking at certain schools and may reach out to certain schools. But then again, those schools are also in that situation. They see a guy like Jack Sears and say, hey, we need a quarterback. You could step in right away for us. So I'm sure it's a little bit of both. But, I mean, it's a database, so you can even go to 24/7, which isn't updated quite as frequently as the official database that the college coaches have access to. But you'll see it constantly updated with kids and different players. And so you know what's out there and you know what potentially you could bring in. But, yeah, I mean, how I think it's probably all different. It just depends on the player, how they're actually contacted and how that gets going.
Yeah, once you're in the portal, you can be recruited. So it's the same thing. Like, schools might come after you. You might go after schools. So, Alex, USC 6, can a defensive coordinator like Charlie Strong or Todd Orlando impact recruits on the defensive side of the ball? What do you think? Like a big DC hire? Would that change things?
Are we talking 2021? Yeah.
But not 2020. Yeah. It's too late for 2020. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too late, and that's not going to be a move that's going to be made before the bowl game. So that's out of the question, I think. And what recruits are left over after the bowl game, if Clay Helton decides to make a move at defensive coordinator, probably not enough guys to be significant. But certainly, USC could hire a defensive coordinator that would make a bigger impact on the recruiting trail. I think, one of the biggest criticisms of Clancy Pendergast is that he's just not interested in recruiting. I mean, even the guy that he brought in with him, who was on a coordinator, Ronnie Bradford, wasn't very interested in recruiting. They just were not guys that were going to grind. I think they feel like they're NFL guys, and Clancy is an NFL guy. I mean, Clancy could say that. He was a coordinator in the NFL, and he coached in the Super Bowl. Like I said, there's not too many guys that you can bring in that have that resume. But at the same time, you could bring in guys if you feel like you're not getting the recruits that you want and you want to excite them. There are different guys that you could bring in that may be able to do that. Certainly a Charlie Strong would be interesting. You know, if Aranda leaves for UNLV, I could see LSU maybe making a move for Charlie Strong. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. You know, I think Ergeron is again, going to be out there looking for the top coordinators. And that's one thing he definitely learned from Lane. I'll say this, you know, people are giving him a lot of credit for, you know, how well he's doing. He should get all the credit in the world for how well he's doing. But he's got a bunch of ex-SC coaches on that staff. Tommy Robinson, James Craig, some of those guys that obviously could not figure it out at USC. Now there's different circumstances and, you know, you had, you know, sanctions on the way and all this other stuff that was going on. And so it's not exactly the same situation as LSU, but people kind of also forget a lot of those guys are actually hired by Lane Kiffin. And one thing Tommy Robinson said to me, and this was, I think, a year after he was at USC, he goes, you know, people may give Lane all kinds of stuff about all the things he says in the media and whatever. He goes, but that guy can put together a staff. And it's true. I think Lane's a smart guy, and I think he comes from a football family. And I think with the connections that his dad has, he put together a lot of good staffs and a lot of good coaches that have gone on and done some things other places. And, you know, some of those guys are at LSU right now.
Yeah. Let's see. We got Big EBC. What is the interest in Justin Houston, Tui Pelotu, and Dwight McLaughlin? Are they still targets? Hopefully I got those right.
Yes, I don't believe Justin Houston is really a target right now. I haven't heard his name float around, but McGovern, yes, definitely a target still. And Tui Pelotu, certainly a target still. I think Tui Pelotu is going to be probably one of those guys that's a February guy, because I don't think he's going to officially visit this weekend, and this is kind of the last weekend of the early signing period. So, I think Tuli Pelotu is definitely going to be a guy that is probably going to be a January guy and a guy that USC has a really good shot on. Obviously, the brother of Marlon, USC's had a great connection there, and a guy that loves Johnny Nansen. So we'll put that down for Johnny. Johnny gets one there. I think the two, yes. Justin, I don't think so. I think that would probably be a backup plan at this point. Don't think he has a scholarship offer. We'll see. Again, in January, if they come up short and they don't have, you know, the full a lot of rides, or they have some guys that transfer and they have some rides open up, you know, if he waits, you never know. He could end up getting a scholarship offer.
Trojan and Eugene, Gary Bryant Jr., is he in?
We'll find out. I think he's going to announce that not the Army All-American Bowl anymore. Now it's the MPC All-American Bowl, I think is what they call it.
Yeah.
I think that's when he's going to announce. So we'll have to see what happens with him. I think USC is in a really good position for him. That's about as much as I can say on that subject.
South Coast Trojan. Without naming names, do you see USC signing a five-star recruit? Also, do you see USC flipping any high-caliber recruits? And, So, so I guess it'd be the same, right? You know.
Yeah, it would be one of the same. Kind of same.
Well, I guess Justin Flo's not—he's not a flip. So.
Well, specifically, yeah. I mean, do I see USC doing that? I guess the question is: are the chances good that they end up doing that? I wouldn't say they're good. I think it's possible. I do think it's possible. I'm not casting. It's a lot more possible than Urban Meyer becoming the coach at USC this past month. How about that?
Nice. All right. That's for flipping and signing five-star guys. It'd be about the same. Like it's possible.
Trying to pin me down here on a little bit. stuff here, and I'm trying to
well, you can just
away from it a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine.
We'll just leave it at the flow. Like I said, 25%, maybe it goes up a little bit. We'll just leave that with that. That there. Yeah.
SC Maid says, GM, any weight or truth to the shade that Melton's father, the running back from Fresno, regarding Clay and kids in California not believing in him or USC, and I'm referring to top level talent, not guys with offers from Western University.
Well, take that one away, Ryan, because you're the one that has a little bit of inside information.
So, yeah, I did get some word from people in Fresno about Melton's father, and it went up in the war room. I think you need to take, every parent doesn't know exactly what's going on. He's a parent that's very active. Maybe pushes the envelope a little bit in certain areas. And I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock into what he's saying. So maybe I just leave it at that. But it's some recruits might feel that way, but he's kind of one of those crazy parents. So he's out there. The guy I talked to compared him to Lamar Ball. So if that says anything, I don't know. I've never got to talk to him. But that's what my intel was telling me from my dudes from Fresno, and I used to cover Fresno State, so I still have a lot of contacts there.
Yeah, I would say, they don't believe in Clay anymore. They don't believe in anything that's 5-7, And then you turn around and then you lose to BYU. There's plenty to say about that, and I'm sure that the kids that are recruits, and we always talk about one game doesn't really matter, two games doesn't really matter. But, when it's a certain trajectory of the football program, they do matter. And it's again, Clay Helton is just that. To get caught up on Clay Helton, I think, is really just the wrong thing to do. I've been saying that for a while. There's a bigger picture here with USC. There's a lot more going on with USC. And I think USC fans and the right people are now starting to sort of ask the right questions, and they've kind of gotten beyond it. It was one of those things that was sort of like, Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, Clay Helton or Lynn Swann? Lynn Swann. Lynn Swann or the whole administration, the BOT? And they're kind of climbing the ladder and starting to see that this is a systematic issue. This is not, you just have a football coach that isn't getting the job done. There's a lot more going on here.
Yeah. We still got a bunch left. We'll try to rapid fire. You've been going pretty quick anyway, but Dabuga Stay Kapu, whatever kind of name that is. Who do you see USC going after and landing at the quarterback spot this year?
Well, they're trying to be involved with a few different guys. C.J. Stroud is still kicking around out there. It's hard to read C.J. Stroud because C.J. Stroud is a guy that had a scholarship offer right before the Oregon game. He came down on official visit before the game, got a scholarship offer. We talked to him the following Monday or Tuesday of that week, and he said that he still didn't have a scholarship offer from USC. So we're like, what? So I kind of, did some double checking to make sure that I wasn't mistaken. And no, I wasn't mistaken. He had a scholarship offer, but he, for a number of weeks, kind of denied having a scholarship offer and looking at USC. Now, I don't know why that is. I don't know what happened there. But now he is acknowledging that he has a scholarship offer from USC. So perhaps it's just because now Clay Helton is the coach and he knows he's going to be the coach. And so it means something more or something I have a scholarship offer from this coaching staff, instead of saying I have a scholarship offer and then they fire the coach. Then the next coach comes in and maybe I don't have a scholarship offer. Maybe that was a thinking. So they're still involved with him. They had a couple other offers out there. I don't see them really going anywhere. They're still, in contact with Bryce Young and trying to do something there. So they want to sign a quarterback in the 2020 class. They've offered a few different kids once Bryce Young decommitted. It's tough. It's tough. They started very late, even though they did offer Stroud earlier than he said he offered him. it was still pretty late in the process for him. And the biggest elephant in the room is that, yeah, Keaton Slovis sitting there as a true freshman. And it's like, okay, who wants to come in and sit behind Keaton Slovis? That's kind of an issue as well. You know, it really, when Bryce Young committed, it was JT Daniels who was going to be the guy, and JT Daniels would be, you know, going on into his junior year. And now he's taken a red shirt, and now you have this freshman that has emerged, which Graham Harrell is, you know, talked really highly of. So it's one of those things that you got to kind of come in and go, okay, maybe I'm going to be taking that red shirt, which is not a bad thing. I mean, you know, I think quarterbacks are in a position where there's some guys have been able to come in as true freshmen and play well, like a Keaton Slovis or Jaden Daniels. You know, Trevor Lawrence played most of the year. You know, he came in and played pretty well. Tua Tagovailoa really played just at the end of the year. So, I mean, I think it's unfair to affirm him. But I think a lot of people see, oh, you know, freshmen can come in and they can make an impact and they want to play right away. But, you know, it's not always the best. You know, some guys get hurt because they're freshmen. Yeah. And that's the tough thing. I mean, USC is in a weird position. And I mean, I think that's another criticism of the staff is that they've found themselves in these weird positions at quarterback quite a few times. I mean, they kind of had to have JT Daniels reclassify to be able to come in, to be able to play, because they just didn't have a lot of confidence in Matt Fink or Jack Sears at that time. And they only had those two guys there. And you needed to have a third, you know, quarterback, because you were missing those other guys, because you had Sam Darnold come in and then leave as a redshirt sophomore. So they've sort of found themselves in some weird situations. And, you know, with a healthy program, usually those guys are lined up, and it's just sort of like LAX, man. You see the flights coming in and everything's coordinated and they just come in. It's just this whole flow of guys. It's like, you know, Georgia with their running back situation. You just got so many good players that they just seem to be stacking, but they get them out, they get them drafted, and then the next guy steps up. And USC got away from that. You know, USC really hasn't had that since, really, I mean, Pete Carroll. You know, Pete had a run there where those quarterbacks were like, boom, 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 you know? You just knew who was going to come in and who was going to leave early, and there's always going to be another guy that was going to be able to step in and be able to take that role.
Yeah. All right, we did way less rapid fire after I asked you to do rapid fire, so we'll go back to the old way, I guess. David Law, I've seen mixed comments on the PED, whether players and parents like Clay. Based on your interactions, what's the truth? And just real quick, the players aren't like a commune. Like, every player is different. Everyone has a different personality. They like different people. They don't like each other. I mean, there's all the parents are different. Sometimes parents don't like a coach and their kid likes the coach. It varies. There's definitely players that, you know, aren't huge fans of Clay and some of the members of the staff. And there's ones that love him. And I think it's, you can't just say all the players like him or all don't. That just doesn't work that way.
I agree. I would say the majority like him.
Yeah, more would like him than don't, I would say. He also said, you said early in the year that certain players would only consider SC if they had a 10-win season. Have any of those guys had a change of heart, and if so, why?
No. You know, Flo is still considering USC. He wasn't really the guy that actually said that. I'll tell you who said it. It was Elias Ricks that said that.
Oh.
And he had told the coaching staff, if you win 10 games, I'm going to be a Trojan. Well, they didn't win 10 games, so he's not a Trojan. I don't know. I mean, LSU's making such a run right now. It'd probably be hard still for them to get him. He was going to officially visit USC, and his mom put the kibosh on that. They've already bought a house in Baton Rouge, and so that sort of fell apart. I think it was the Oregon weekend that he was supposed to officially visit. But after that game, that probably would have put a pretty big X through that potential anyways.
Yeah.
That's that.
This is an interesting one. Bensov 1113. Due to a lack of strong class so far and the coaches out recruiting, does that have any influence on why the team isn't practicing and why they haven't announced any coaching changes? All hands on deck approach.
No idea. I mean, I think that just not any coaching changes because they need their coach in the bowl game. I mean, Clay Helton figured that out after he fired his whole defensive staff when he played in the Holiday Bowl last time.
Yeah.
It didn't end too well. So it was really unnecessary to fire him when he did. I mean, he kind of said it was for their own benefit to go start looking for jobs, but I think it was unnecessary, and I don't think he would make that move again. And so I think that's really what it's all about. It's making sure they know what they want to do, prepare against Iowa, have a game plan together, and then afterwards, I mean, it's before Christmas too, so it's one of those things that, or it's not before Christmas, it's right after Christmas, but we're like right in that period where we're going to have the dead period, so it's really before that, so they can make their moves during the dead period, and then they should. You know, that's the thing that, you know, again, we kind of, I think about it and I almost get irritated because it's one of those things, you've got this dead period and we'll watch USC just go through the dead period and they'll be on vacation and nothing will happen. And then it's the week of our, you know, the first visits and it's like all this questions about, oh, maybe they're going to fire somebody right before their first, you know, January official visit or something. That just seems like the USC thing to do. But yeah, hopefully... yeah, it's like during that period, if you're going to make coaching changes, that's the perfect time to do it. You got about 2 weeks, almost 3 weeks there where you can make that move if you're going to make a different move with your coordinator or your assistant coaches.
Who is best? Who's the best up-and-coming recruiter on the staff, like Seahawk or Vianney?
The best up-and-coming recruiter on the staff? Yeah, I mean... Chris gets a lot of dap from a lot of guys. I think that he definitely relates well. He's a little more, he understands the process as it is now. He understands 7-on-7. He understands the off season. So I think, yeah, certainly from that standpoint, he's limited though because he's only a grad assistant, so right, he can't really, you know, do a lot. I think Joe DeForest is kind of a sneaky guy with recruiting, and he doesn't get his name out there a lot, and a lot of people don't know about him on the staff, but he's got some guys. He got some guys last year that were really good players, Dorian Hewitt, Britton Allen. So I think, you know, he's an interesting guy that you kind of have to watch out for. He can grab some guys here and there. So I'd say that, you know, he's kind of the guy that from the full-time staff is probably the best up and coming as of right now. But certainly, yeah, if you're talking about just in general, future, yeah, I mean, I think definitely Chris Hawkins is the best new up-and-coming guy.
This is from Silent Commit. Nice name. Is Buckley Shelton in, and how many wide receivers will be part of this class?
No, he's not in, and he's not going to officially visit this weekend, which tells me that USC's made probably some other arrangements, and they may not have room to be able to bring him in. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, I mean, he wants to commit before January. He wants to commit, I think, at the bowl game as well. So I think, yeah, I think, you know, USC's probably looking at two in this class. I don't think you have room for three. I think you're probably trying to get two. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Arizona Trojan, AZ Trojan. Have you had a chance to talk with Bruce Rawlinson in the past? And if you have, what's his opinion on the clown show that is USC football?
That is the what of USC football?
Oh, what the clown show that is USC football. What's his opinion on USC football? If you've talked to him, I don't know.
No. I have. I mean, I haven't talked to him recently about USC football. No, yeah. Certainly.
Yeah, he just retired, right? Did he retire last year? Or is he retiring or something? Or am I get that wrong?
You got that wrong, to my knowledge. I don't know. You might be breaking some news there, but
I thought it was.
They just played against St. John Bosco in the Southern Section Championship game, which was 1-2, and Bosco upset them.
Yeah, I thought for some reason I thought he was retiring, but I don't know. Guess not. Strike that from the record. Trojan Dynasty. What is the national perception about Drevno's development of offensive line guys for the NFL? And what's the staff's relationship with the local high schools, especially powerhouses like St. John Bosco in modern day?
I mean, the relationship is okay. It's again, if you're not winning, you know, and you don't have some kind of great system that you can put out there at clinics and stuff, you have kids leaving and going out of state. It's kind of just a flashback to the late 90s. I mean, we saw this. This is not something new to Southern California. If you do not win, really specifically if USC does not win, if USC does not win, the Pac-12 doesn't get a lot of respect, and a lot of those kids are going to go back east. We saw it with Kyle Wright, Lorenzo Booker, Kevin Burnett, DJ Williams. There was a bunch of guys in the late 90s and the early 2000s that went to Miami and Florida State and Tennessee because USC was terrible. And UCLA was actually okay during that time. I mean, Bob Tolio had them going to Rose Bowls and stuff. It didn't matter. A lot of those kids that were SC-type kids were just like, I'm not going to go to USC and get developed and go to the NFL and play for a big-time team that's going to be nationally ranked and playing for championships. I'm going to go somewhere who will. And you got a lot of kids that are locally here have family in other areas. It's one of those things where it's a big city, and usually when you have people from big cities, you have them moving here from other places. And so you've got a lot of family, and those kids are not afraid to get on a plane and go back east because they've got a grandma back east still, they've got an aunt. And so it's just totally different culturally here, I think, in a lot of the, you know, smaller rural areas where you have some of those college towns in the SEC.
Zach P4, so this is interesting. So how would the class trend or change if Graham Harrell left for another opportunity? Please no sugarcoating.
How would the class change? I don't think it's going to change significantly because he's not an offensive line coach.
Yeah, that's mostly offensive linemen. So, but yeah, you don't think it would be that much would change?
Not with this class, no. I think he's done good things, and I think that, you know, Gary Bryant would be, you know, questioning a bit. You know, he loves the offense, and that they throw the ball as much as they do. But I think potentially USC would still be able to land him, even if, you know, Harrell went to Texas. But it's going to change significantly. No, it's 17, 18 commits, and, you know, half of those guys are offensive linemen.
Yeah. Marv Jr., what are the chances with Drennan, and if not Bijan, and did Juergens decommit, or was he encouraged to?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Juergens. With Bijan, it's tough. It's a tough read because he's really not saying much about visits, and he's not saying much about his contact with other schools. He says he's solid with Texas. So that's a tough one to say. USC's trying there. With Drennan, we haven't really heard from him yet. We know he had a great visit. You know, we heard from his coach that he really enjoyed himself and that USC gave him a lot to think about, but haven't really heard much about him specifically. It's sort of, you know, USC feels like they can get one of those guys, but I couldn't give you any percentages on either of those guys right now.
TWP Trojan, will DL Sakona be part of this class? Has he visited?
He's going to visit this weekend. So he's a guy that quite hasn't had the year that Kobe Pepe has. Kobe Pepe's had a really good year. I think he and Jonah Monheim are probably the two guys that have kind of exceeded where they were ranked at the beginning of the year and could be, you know, really considered underrated right now. But I gotta say, I like Sakona a lot as a guard. I don't think that's where USC is really recruiting him, but if you get a chance to watch some of our ISO highlights that we have him, and we went up to go see him, for that Cal Berkeley weekend, I think it was Chris Trevino and Keeley and Chakan. I might've saw another game, but we got some ISO film of him, and I watch his highlights, and, you know, he's not the biggest guy in terms of arm length and things that you would want an offensive lineman, but man, he is a mauler, and he's just a cannonball coming out of his stance and just destroys people. So he's another guy. I mean, there's going to be some guys in this class. I mean, we talked about even Jack Yari when he was committed, how with the bloodlines that he has, how he could be an offensive lineman. So when I joke half the class could be offensive lineman, I mean that half jokingly.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. Hour and a half. We got a good 90 minutes in. We'll try to do more of these, obviously, as things get closer to signing day, sub post day, signing day stuff and everything. So only 8 days away as of right now. So we probably won't do one beforehand. Maybe we'll do a late preview, but we'll definitely do a recap show afterwards. But great stuff as always, Gerard. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, and thanks for the interest. I thought that it would just be a troll session and people would say, go away, Ryan.
No.
I'm going to cancel if you keep asking me about recruiting.
A lot of great questions. So there was good stuff there. So great way to do that. Nice job, Gerard. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive and, you know, of course, on the Peristyle. I'm Ryan Abraham. You can follow me at Inside Troy. Thanks for tuning in to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.